Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? Welcome to the Around the World podcast. I'm your host, Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more in the Around the World podcast.
Hey everyone, I'm coming at you from Shaanxi, China, which has been my home base for the last 3 weeks or so. I've been staying at the Horsepen 46 Hostel. This place is beautiful and it's just been an amazing experience here. I've got about a week left and then my wife Katie will be here to join me and we're going to have a little adventure. We have a couple of mountain bikes here and we're going to at least try to ride across a portion of Yunnan province in China on the bicycles for a couple of weeks over the Chinese New Year holiday. And then we'll be back in Beijing for a few months where we currently live. We'll be there through June. And the only other big news I have for now is I'm working on finishing my book, 1,000 Days Between Part 2. Stay tuned for updates on that. And starting in August, Katie and I plan to take some time off and travel around Asia. And so we have a lot of interesting, fun things coming up for this year. I'm really excited about it. But for now, I'm going to talk about Rami. He's my guest for today. We just got done having a really cool, fun discussion. And Rami is not his real name. That's kind of a nickname. His real name is very hard for me to pronounce. So here's how he says it.
Rimvydas Markevičius.
Rami comes from Lithuania, and I think he's the first person from Lithuania that I've ever met. Before I met him, I knew next to nothing about his country. I could not have even found it on a map. Now at least I can say that I can do that, and I think I learned a little bit from our discussion. You're going to learn some too. We also talked about China, of course, since we are in China right now. Let's get right into my discussion with Rami.
I have some problems speaking English because I have this Eastern accent, Russian accent. You know, sometimes it gets up when I have to say some words with pronouns, for example.
Oh, you say it like that in English?
I used to say that, and now I try to speak as much as I can in English. Yeah. Natively.
Oh, you've worked on your accent?
Yeah. I tried, but when I listen to myself, I still can hear this Eastern accent, Eastern European accent.
Well, there's this thing where most people don't like to hear themselves, their voice, because it sounds different than when you're talking, and it has something to do with like your one of the bones, I think, in your head.
I read an article about this. It's because, we have this acoustics different, that the vibrations in our inside our body is like have influence on the ears, what we hear.
Yeah.
So when we hear it going without vibrations from inside the body, it sounds different.
it makes
all the difference with these vibrations that you reach the ears.
It's strange, and I think it's a little weird too to hear my voice. And it's interesting though that I think the most fascinating thing is when did we start having recordings? Maybe like 120 years ago, 130.
I don't know.
I mean, recorded audio. I wonder what the earliest recorded audio is. I'll have to find that out. But anyway, it's not long ago, and before that, no one ever knew what this actually sounded like. The first person to know what they sounded like was in the 20th century, basically, or in the late 19th.
Yeah, then I think they were surprised.
They must have been. They must have thought something was wrong with the recorder. Anyway, when I hear your voice, I don't necessarily hear it like a Russian type accent. I don't know.
I got a nice compliment this morning from this CSA man. This senior man. He said, I thought you were an American. Oh, come on. No.
Oh, really? The American guy said that?
Yeah, this from Seattle.
Oh, wow.
Yesterday, I said, oh, thank you. Of course.
You must be from Louisiana.
Americans, you are very friendly always. Very know how to give compliments, even though not necessarily truthful. So I don't know. In China, I got used to not believing what Chinese say when they compliment you.
Okay.
I don't know what about Americans.
I think we have this reputation for being almost too nice.
Yeah.
At least when I ask other people from other countries.
Yeah.
Like, if you say like, hey, how are you? And it comes off as fake. Like, you don't really want to know how they are.
Yeah.
And it's just our cultural thing. I was reading about I think it was a German who came to America and just couldn't believe everyone was so nice. She thought it must be fake.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of fakeness, I think.
So what about this compliment thing? You know?
Right. Well, that is a little strange.
Yeah.
But
can you hear this accent clearly?
I can tell you are not a native English speaker, but I can't tell where your accent's from.
Okay.
I wouldn't necessarily think Eastern Europe. But good. I wouldn't think any specific place, honestly. I'd have to ask you.
Not Russian.
No, maybe now that you said it sounds Russian. Now I can start to hear it.
Okay.
But
I will listen to this recording then.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to hear
voice.
It. Right. So where are you from?
Lithuania.
And Lithuania. And I know...
It was Eastern Europe 2 weeks ago. And now it became Northern Europe.
And who decided this?
United Nations.
The UN just got together and said...
Yeah, now you are... The three Baltic little countries are now the Northern Europe. And I don't know what that means. Maybe economical sense.
Because right. Is there any impact other than just they say it? Is there any other consequences?
Pride.
Pride. Are you proud to be Northern European?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You don't want to be Eastern European?
Yeah. That's this notion in Europe, that Eastern Europe is like the lowest part of the Europe. Because it was a Soviet heritage.
There is that reputation. And Northern Europe... When I think of Northern Europe, I think of a lot of money and cold countries, but also countries with a lot of money, like Norway.
Besides that, do you have any? Because in Europe is different a bit.
Oh, how do they see it?
We see it as a very eco-friendly and very progressive country.
Oh, I would also see it as a very progressive or socialist
country. The money wouldn't come in the first place. Yeah, they are rich, they have money, but they are very naturalistic.
Okay. Well, and when I look at lists of the most happiest countries on earth, Denmark is usually one of the highest, if not the highest.
I would not say that about Norway or Sweden or Lithuania.
Yeah, when I think of Eastern European countries, I think of sad places, people who are very sad.
Is the heritage from the Soviet Union?
Yeah, heritage, or you could say you inherited that. I think it would be better.
It's like consequence of being the post-Soviet country. Because, there are a lot of negativity in people's mind.
Yeah.
That's why now it's getting better, because now the world is getting closer. But 10 years ago, it was so depressing to be among these people. They were like, the older generation was totally negative. The youngers, the independent kids, like me, I think they see more brighter future. Now we are getting progressive also with this new generation going in front of Lithuania, leading. That's why we became Northern Europe, because we also very into the renewable resources. And,
oh, really?
And
like solar, wind?
Yeah, this electric cars.
Huh.
And banking, and there are a lot of economical interactions with the Scandinavian countries.
Oh, okay. So renaming yourselves has a lot to do with this kind of trade and...
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And what's the capital of Lithuania?
Vilnius.
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 I have to admit, I know nothing about Lithuania. I don't know if I've ever met someone from there. Do you know the population?
Yeah, of course. Officially, it's 3 million. Not over 3 million.
In the whole country?
Yeah, and it's decreasing.
Wow, because people are moving out? Or
one is people are moving out quite fast. Huh. Yeah, immigration is a huge problem in Lithuania already for a few years, maybe five.
Wow.
Like we lost 1 million who emigrated.
A million? A quarter of your country left? Yeah. And they left for what? Western Europe?
Yep. Or? Yeah, Western Europe and States and Australia. The main destinations are Norway, Germany, England, Ireland also. So when we have Eurovision, you know this song contest, we always get a lot from Ireland and England.
This is I'm not familiar with this. So this is a contest, you said?
Song contest, Eurovision.
So like American Idol, kind of? Do you know that program?
Every country has his musician that prepares the song, and then they compete. European countries compete.
Oh, okay.
And then they vote afterwards. Every country votes, but your country cannot vote for your singer. So we usually get the highest points from England and Ireland.
Okay.
Because there's a majority of Lithuanians in there, and they're all voting.
So it's not British voting for you, it's you voting for you.
Yeah.
Huh.
This year is funny because last year Australia and Israel was also in this contest. And Australia won the sixth place or fifth.
Okay.
It was funny because it's Eurovision, European song.
Yeah, how's Australia in it?
I don't know.
And Israel.
It became pop shit.
So
I don't like it.
So, so it's one of those shows that's not, it's like maybe culturally important, but not a.
It was, not last so year was so funny because Ukraine and Russia were also there, and it was held in Ukraine. Ukraine prepared the war song about how the countrymen fell for the war.
Oh, that was their song?
Yeah.
So this is pretty sensitive stuff then.
Yeah, there was so politically sensitive.
So it is serious.
And the Russia got the lowest points.
Oh, wow.
And the Ukraine got the first place.
Really?
So it was totally political.
Wow, so there's a lot of people on Ukraine's side, huh?
Yes.
Or were they just the best?
No.
Was their song the best?
No, song was...
just okay?
Okay, yeah. But I think there was... because Europe is mainly for Ukraine. So Russia was really an outsider in there. Feel a bit sorry for them. No.
Okay. So, and this is their way of expressing that then? Or one safe way without going to war?
Yeah.
Of expressing this dislike of Russia's moves. That's interesting how politics can play out in different arenas. I mean, I guess it happens in sports sometimes too. We have this famous story in America of, I think it was the 1980 Olympics.
Yeah.
When do you know the hockey team, the Winter Olympics?
Yeah.
The Soviet Union had all like professional players, and they were the best, and they're highly paid, and America only let amateurs compete. So they were all like 18, 19 year old kids, and they were huge underdogs. And then they came back to defeat the Soviet Union, and this is like almost like a big blow in real life, not just in hockey.
I've heard of some Olympics that were boycotted by many countries because of the situation, but I don't remember clearly what was that.
And I forget exactly which countries and which year. Was it 76 maybe, or was it 80? I don't remember.
Cuba crisis maybe, no.
Oh, did that trigger it too? Because that was much earlier.
Yeah.
Huh.
That, yeah.
But I guess that happens. I mean, when you watch the Olympics, there's a lot of politics happening too.
Underneath the Moscow covers. Moscow Olympics. In 86 maybe. Huh. Or 80. When the Olympics that were in Moscow. And the huge majority of Western countries boycotted these games because of Russian actions.
Huh. And it's pretty sad when that happens, I think, because a lot of the athletes, they only have one chance. And they've worked their whole lives to make it.
Yeah,
and then,
politics.
You know, it's one thing if they fail because they sucked at their sport. But it's quite another if their countries, like, high up in power aren't getting along well. And, that's what's causing them to miss their only chance at the biggest moment of their lives.
That's, for example, Taiwan.
Yeah, that's another big contentious one.
And China.
Well, they allow in the Olympics, they allow Taiwan to
China's Taipei.
Yeah, Chinese Taipei
behind Chinese flag. You know?
Right. Right, so there's all these specific rules, like what flag can you carry and what can you call yourselves?
When I was studying this in Taiwan, this political stuff, because I'm not really a political person.
Uh-huh.
I'm more like an artist, but it's so funny how childish it is in the world political arena. For example, how did Taiwan get out of UN? Because Taiwan was too proud to sit in the one room with another China. So
right.
They said it's only one China, so if it's not us, then there.
Yeah.
And everybody chose the communist China, and then Taiwan was left out, and then it become as a situation right now.
Right, the status quo. But
it was independent country all until now. But now the political game arena, all the politicians, big politicians, pretend that Taiwan is not independent.
Right.
Because of interests of their country with China.
Yeah.
And that's why I think.
That's the game that we all play. It's, if you look at it, if you look at Taiwan, it's a totally different country than China. Uh-huh. But we all have to say, yep, it's just one country. And
I don't play today.
Yeah.
I don't like this kid.
Well, the interesting thing is China considers Taiwan to be part of China, right? Just a province of China. But Taiwan considers China to be part of, or themselves to be the real China, right? It's.
I think they acknowledge, how do you say acknowledge?
Acknowledge, yeah.
China, communist China, but they also want to say that they are Republic of China.
Right, right. There's the People's Republic and then there's the Republic of China.
I always find it funny how Chinese always say it's a province of China. But it has its own currency, its own government, and its own army.
Right.
And the visa, you have to get visa to go in there.
Right.
But it's still a province. You know?
Yeah, I know. And I just stay out of those issues, really. It's not worth my time or effort. No, I'm not going to try to convince anybody one way or another.
The main interest is the human people's happiness, not political.
Yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. And my main interest, I think, is travel and just kind of discovering the world and try not to get into these kind of debates that they're almost pointless anyway. That
you cannot do anything.
Nah, no one changes their mind. But anyway, like speaking of travel, so you mentioned that a million people have left your country, which is a crazy number considering the low population.
That's statistics.
And you are one of them. And so what happened?
I'm not emigrant.
Well, okay, so it's not permanent.
Yeah.
Okay, well, but we're in China now, so how did you get here?
I'm good. I'm studying Chinese culture, first place.
Uh-huh.
Then I was in Taiwan. I got a really bad look on China. I made up very negative look towards China in Taiwan. So that's why I thought I should go in here to see how the situation is really in here.
Into the lion's den, as they say.
Into the lion's
den. The lion's den.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I applied for the scholarship, Chinese government scholarship, for 1 year of Chinese studies.
Okay.
I stopped my studies in my country for 2 years and went here in Suzhou. And now it's winter holiday, so I went to the mountains because I miss mountains a lot.
Okay, so that's why you're in Yunnan?
That's why I'm in Yunnan, yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome here. How's the pollution in Suzhou? Is it pretty
it's
bad?
It's bad in winter. It's because they use coal to heat.
Okay.
I don't have this ability to differentiate smog and fog, you know? It looks like fog, you know?
Yeah.
Like you cannot see anything because it's fog. No, they say it's smog.
Right, and that's kind of a new word too, smog. And I believe it just means smoke and fog, is smog.
Ah, okay.
I think that's what that means. But yeah, it if you're not aware that it's actual pollution, it can look like a fog, like a thick fog.
And I cannot smell it.
Oh, you can't? Oh, because
I don't feel any consequence of smoke yet.
That's
why I never
smoke.
Have this mask.
Ah, okay.
I never used it. I don't really feel need for it.
Oh, maybe it's not as bad in Suzhou, but in Beijing, for the first month or so I was there, I had a cough.
A cough?
Immediately. Okay. I mean, not constantly, but like once every half an hour, I would just go, just have something in my throat.
Okay.
But then it went away, which is a weird thing. And I wonder if it's
that's where they do this spitting thing.
Oh, yeah. That feels so good, though. I mean, Westerners come to China a lot, and they see people spitting, and they hate it. But I kind of like it. I'm like, yeah, it's just you can... There's no...
Oh, you mean you like to do it yourself?
I like to do it. I don't necessarily want to watch other people spit.
Like a beautiful girl walks, and then she suddenly stands.
Yeah. It's not very feminine.
Yeah.
But then again, it's like, yeah, this is like, you can do anything here. You can just spit in public, no problem.
Well, it's getting Western in the big cities, so you can't pee anymore in streets.
Oh, really?
In China, I mean. You know,
yeah, it's...
They try to become civilized people. have you seen all these slogans? That's be civilized, don't spit.
Don't pee in public?
Yeah, or... Hmm. Step one step closer to the toilet.
Oh, they always say that on the urinals.
Yeah.
They always say step a little closer.
Yeah.
Which I never do because it's so disgusting and like I don't want like my feet are already in like a puddle of piss, you know. I don't want to step further into the piss on the ground.
That's why they say that because of these
But like I'll do it once everyone else does it. And that's probably what everybody thinks, you know.
I don't think they
care. Just the splashing.
You know how they say in Chinese? I'm not saying it's Chinese, but like one small step for you, one big step for civilization. I don't know.
It's like Neil Armstrong on the moon.
Yes.
It is funny. I saw once in an airport on a urinal, it said, we aim to please, you aim to please. So it's, except the second one was T-O-O. So you should also aim. Please. It's a funny play on words in English, which someone with an expert level of English must have written that because it was really, that's really well thought out.
Yeah, because sometimes they make so funny mistakes with English.
Oh, God, the signs that...
Have you had any...
Have you ever seen it?
Funny stories about this?
Oh, I'm sure, but I...
Or the menu.
It's honestly, it's hard for me to think of a specific example right now, but... There's just so many.
Yeah,
why? Do you have some specific one?
No, I can't remember.
It's one of those things when I first moved here like 2.5 years ago, I probably could have told you 10 different stories, but now I've just forgotten them all. It just all seems
too small,
so normal.
Too small. Yeah. And too normal.
It's entirely normal for me to see a sign with horrible English, and I just go, yeah, whatever. It's not funny anymore. It's, you know.
Also, I think I became more Chinese now.
Oh, yeah?
The first times I was here, I was also shocked, as everybody gets shocked.
Right, yeah.
Feel that everything is so strange and different. But now I'm so like, honk. Everyone honks in the streets. It's normal. Everyone crosses. Doesn't matter the light, traffic light, you know.
Yeah, the crosswalks don't matter.
Yeah. So
cars don't stop anyway.
I just go across the street and it's like... Show the hands to stop the cars.
Oh, you do that? That's bold.
Yeah, you have to be like that.
But you have to. Like, they'll stop. They always,
At first I was very European because in my country we just wait. No, we just get close to this crosswalk zebra lines.
Yeah.
And everybody just stops.
Yeah.
And here I've waited for like 10 minutes or something. No, first time.
Yeah.
I mean, then I learned that you have to just be bold and go.
Right. Play Frogger. It's like sometimes one lane at a time. Do you know Frogger?
No.
Oh, it's a video game from the 80s.
No, not the 80s.
Where you're 90s. A frog and you have to cross a road with a lot of cars. And you go one step at a time. And
this is it.
Yeah.
I know this. On the phone, there was something.
Oh, yeah. And you can play it in real life. Just come to China. But there's high consequences. You don't just lose your quarter when you get hit.
I think three friends of mine have already had a traffic incident.
Oh no!
They were hit by a car or the bike.
Holy shit! Three.
Not severely, but like bumped.
Okay. Well, the good thing is they drive pretty slow in China, especially in the cities. Sometimes I'm wondering why they're barely moving, but
they're moving, always moving slowly.
Always moving. But if the
flow ain't going,
the flow is always happening. But if the road opens in front of them and there's no cars, I mean, my instinct would be to step on the gas. But a lot of the time they'll just keep moving that slow pace. But the good news about that slow pace is the traffic accidents you see them all the time, but when you see them, they're usually not that bad.
Oh yeah.
But then again, if you're walking and get hit by a car, it's almost always going to be bad.
I don't
for
know.
You, not for the car.
I remember the first friend that was he was driving a longboard through the zebra lines.
Oh, a skateboard? A
skateboard, yeah.
Oh.
And he was hit 2 meters, maybe flew 2 meters.
Wow.
He had some bruise.
Yeah? Did he hit his head? Was his head
okay? No, he was okay. But the Chinese get off the car and start shouting. But then as soon as he saw the white person, he was on his knees pleading to not do anything, to not call the police or anything.
Oh, really?
But that was 3 years ago, I think.
Huh.
Because I think the police are better for the foreigners.
Huh. I wonder if it's still
Chinese.
That way.
I could
see that going either way. I could see them going, oh, a foreigner, we have to like make sure that they don't hate our country or whatever.
Yeah.
But then I could also see them saying, well, he's just an idiot foreigner. He doesn't know anything. Of course it's his fault. Why did he walk in front of a car?
Yeah.
I don't really know how that would play out. I guess I've never really seen it.
In China, the person's value is lower.
Yeah.
So if you got hit by a car, if they are Chinese, then like it's not a big thing.
Yeah.
But if it's a foreigner, you know, the foreigner, the white people's value is higher because we are all individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
in our culture, for sure.
They make not. We make. I think we make bigger thing out of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or for example, going in the street and someone kicks you, and they always do to each other, like kicking and pushing each other.
In a crowd?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But we have more ego, I think, than when someone of Chinese hits us, push us, we like get very insulted.
Yes.
That's a problem.
At first, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, now I don't feel insulted at all if someone pushes me.
Yeah, because you got used to it.
Yeah, I'm more used to it, and I'll push them too. I'm not saying like shove someone out of the way, but if I need to get by and some people are in front of me talking, I'll tap them, I'll push them a little bit.
Yeah.
They'll move, and they don't mind. It's just
normal.
Yeah,
that's the point.
I'm just going with the culture.
Do as the Romans do.
Yeah, exactly. You have to do it that way. Again, otherwise you won't get anywhere. It's kind of, you almost have to either adapt here or just leave. I mean, some people can exist in a Western bubble within certain areas, like parts of Beijing, definitely a lot of Shanghai. You can be a foreigner and not adjust to the culture at all and still get by because there's so much foreign stuff.
Mm.
Like so many people speak English in certain areas. And there's Western restaurants.
Yeah.
You could take taxis everywhere.
That's why I don't like that.
Yeah.
Shanghai, Beijing, no. I don't like it.
But Beijing is less. Have you been there?
Yeah, I was, but just traveling for a few days.
Yeah. It's.
I haven't lived there.
It's not as westernized as Shanghai is.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, there's Sanlitun, which is very westernized. But then the rest of the city is not so much. But Shanghai just feels like much more. Like, I wouldn't just walk up to any random person and expect them to speak some English in Beijing.
Oh,
but in Shanghai, yeah. I mean, if I need directions or something, I could probably assume a random person would at least know a little bit of English in Shanghai, but not so much in Beijing.
No, in these cities, there are so many these called workers for migrant workers.
Oh yeah, for
they
sure.
are not well, very do not know English quite well.
No, they wouldn't at all. I mean, yeah, I should explain this a little. There's a huge amount of construction in China still happening.
Oh yeah.
Has been going on for, well, I don't know, 20 years probably.
Yeah,
nonstop. And it's still going on, and it's kind of moving further and further from the city centers.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of what happens is they'll import workers from villages in the interior of the country, and they'll come in and do a lot of the construction work, and they'll live on a construction site and build whatever buildings they're going to build, and then move on to a new site. And a lot of them are very poor and not so well educated.
Yep.
Which is not their fault at all, but they just grew up in, you know, this environment.
Mm.
It was a little shocking when I first moved here, actually, because they were building the dorms where we were going to live, or the school.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They were still building one of the buildings 2 weeks before school started, and it was in the middle of construction. And Katie and I, my wife and I, were given this really nice apartment right on campus. And if I looked out my window, I saw these guys living not even in a tent, just like with a little tarp over their head, and they're just sleeping on the ground, and they're doing all the construction work.
Maybe they're just resting for some time. No,
they live there. They definitely live there.
Okay.
Because I'd see them coming out, like, I'd walk out in the morning, and they're like cooking breakfast in a wok.
Oh god.
And they had a porta potty, but it never got emptied. So that, you know, porta potty, like a toilet outside, they never emptied it, so it was full like after a day, and then people were just using the toilet outside.
Okay.
And the living conditions were just very substandard. But I was told there wasn't really anything we could do. You know, like, if we offered to help, it would kind of be like insulting to them, because they're like, wait, why would you help us? We're doing a job, and this is what we're getting paid to do, and we're really proud of the work we do.
I always, often think about this issue, that these migrant workers go to the big cities to seek for the good life.
Mm.
But actually, they left their good life back in their countryside. For example, here, you see these people. I don't think they feel too bad about how they live. They have food, they do their work. You know, they have family.
Yeah.
Why do you need to go somewhere to make more money, to buy more stuff, you know?
Well, yeah, I guess they don't see it the same way. And
my point of view, you know.
Yeah.
I sometimes really want to go out back in the countryside and just plant some vegetables and live easy life.
Yeah, I think about that sometimes. I think a lot of people do. But I think the key is, though, we have that choice. We have the option.
Ah, okay.
Right? And, like, people here, it's their life, and they don't have a lot of choices sometimes.
And so maybe they are blinded by these ideas that you will have a good life in the city, even though you live quite well in the countryside.
Yeah, the grass is always greener on the other side, is what we say in English. And they probably hear about the great wealth that exists in the cities.
Just the same as the American dream for many Europeans and Southern Americans.
Absolutely. The American dream very much exists here, I think. And
by American dream, you also mean that it's like unreachable. Like, you seek for a good life, but eventually you're not that.
Oh, is that how you see it?
Yeah.
Ah.
You go Europeans went to America to seek for a good life, but they never got it.
Oh, this is debatable, I guess, because Americans tend to see it as like a real thing, although maybe less and less nowadays. But especially, you know, after World War II, it was like, you know, you could have a really good life. And I guess there were waves of immigration.
Mm.
One wave was early 20th century.
Yeah.
And my opinion would be it was absolutely possible to make a good life for yourself from nothing. And maybe it doesn't happen as much nowadays, but I think, I don't know, I would like, I'm a pretty optimistic person, not pessimistic. And I would like to think that the American dream is still alive. But, you know, there's different opinions on this issue.
Mm.
There's not necessarily one right or wrong idea.
Yeah, I've after Taiwan, I got rid of this tendency of mine to generalize things.
Ah, right.
Because I used to generalize or categorize. I don't know which, what's the difference, but...
I think generalize is maybe both, but like, I'm generalizing.
This is only that, this is only that, you know.
Right, and...
China is only like this. I was used to say that, oh, China is like dirty and they are all spitting and all that.
Yeah.
And after Taiwan, I went to China again for 1 month volunteering. And then I decided not generalize things anymore. So yeah, American dream also. Not for everybody.
Yeah, and it's an abstract concept too, the American dream. I mean, yeah, the idea of buying a house and raising a family, retiring when you're 65, whatever. But the generalization thing is interesting. I find myself, I still do it, and I try to stop, but I can't help it. But I find myself doing it less with China.
So don't think about Lithuanians the way you think about me.
Don't think about what?
Lithuanians. All the Lithuanians are not like me.
Yeah, all the Lithuanians are the same. That's what I always think. I've always thought that way.
Because I'm quite... No, I cannot say that also.
You're not...
Not... Majority of Lithuanians are not like me.
Okay. I'm probably not a typical American either. I have to admit that. You know?
Good.
But then again, what is? Like,
conservative? Majority of Lithuanians are conservative because our nation is, because our country is nation state. You know, nation state, like 85% of Lithuanians.
Are what? 85% are?
Of population is Lithuanian.
Oh, are ethnically Lithuanian.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So we tend to see others, like others. Like
as outsiders.
Black people are not very welcome. Okay, also I'm generalizing right now. The capital and the big bigger cities are okay. They are very liberal. But if you go in the countryside, in the smaller cities, there's still a lot of racism, sexism. It's, again, the heritage of Soviet Union, Russian mentality.
Well, that is almost like a divide. I think everywhere I've gone, there's a divide between the cities and the country. Like people have different attitudes, and the cities tend to be more liberal, more progressive, and country people who live in small towns or in the country tend to be more conservative.
If you would be only in the capital of Lithuania, you would think that Lithuania is so progressively liberal. But if you go countryside, no, you will be okay because you look like us.
I could pass as a Lithuanian. Yeah.
You probably won't get hit.
Hit? Just for being a different skin color?
At first, I think there will be only word hits.
Oh, insults you mean?
Or? Yeah, insults.
Okay.
Okay.
Hmm.
I don't know what's the difference in the situation right now, because I really haven't experienced that. But I've heard 10 years ago, it was like that. And you go in the street... Someone asks you for a small cigarette.
Yeah.
If you don't have it, you get a punch. If you have it, it's not the right one. You get a punch.
Wow, that's tough. I mean,
it was a Russian mentality.
Yeah, I think of Russians as being really tough. It's just to put one more generalization in there.
But it is mainly because Russian mentality: the man is strong, and you have to be a man.
Yeah.
And show this.
Hmm.
Or to keep your place among the. Like among the tribe. So there was this thinking. I think they're still in the streets, the street kids, you know, they not anymore kids, the street people.
Yeah,
they have a hierarchy of who's being the boss, who's being the, like, mafia, something.
Sure,
like mafia.
Yeah. There's the leader, there's always the alpha, you might say.
Yeah.
Exists in the animal kingdom too, right?
Well, it could be related to animal kingdom. This mentality is very close to animalistic way of living, not human.
Well, we are animals.
We're more than animals.
That's another interesting debate, isn't it? Because
is there a debate about
maybe we're more than animals. We definitely have
choice.
A lot to us that no other animal has.
Yeah.
But we also have a lot of
instincts.
A lot of tendencies that we share with our primate cousins and our mammalian cousins.
That's true.
So,
but the Lithuanian girls are very beautiful. It's not a subjective opinion.
That's objective.
The Eastern European, the Russian, and Lithuania includes in this region.
Mm-hmm.
The girls are really have good genome.
Good genetics.
Genetics, yeah.
Hmm.
Definitely. Tall, beautiful structure, you know, all these good features. So it's quite famous. Ukrainian girls, Russian girls, Lithuanian girls in the world.
Yeah, I certainly famous with Russian girls, but so then again, these are, you know, Ukraine and Lithuania, and your neighbors are smaller countries. So I don't have many opinions, you know.
About
you tend to what? About your country, because it's so small and not that well known, which is why it's awesome to meet you and talk to you and find out.
Well, historically, we were once the biggest country in Europe.
Yeah, part of the Soviet Union?
No, for 500 years ago.
Oh, a long time ago.
Yeah, in the medieval ages, we were very... What is this? Progressive country in Europe.
Okay.
We had hygiene, while all these
barbaric tribes.
No, they were considered to be Western and developed countries, but they were like hygiene was bad. They were like washing one time in a year, something.
Well, in a few countries that hasn't changed. France.
They use perfume, huh?
Yeah.
Still. We're the last country to be Christianized in Europe.
Okay.
So we still have this pagan religion in our country. And the strong respect for nature.
Okay.
So we kind of really care about the environment and forests and water. And there are many shamanistic culture, tribal culture, festivals, and so musics, and all these, you know, artworks and craftsmanship.
And do people still practice this as a religion? Or
there is.
It,
there
or
is official. Now I think it's official religion, pagan, Lithuanian pagan religion.
Oh, it's officially recognized.
Yeah, it has a huge culture.
Huh.
Ancient culture. 2,000 years, 3,000 years.
What? Yeah, yeah, I would not have guessed that. I mean, I know a lot of people, I don't know, maybe practice not Western religions, but more animistic, more like Buddhism, for example.
Oh,
but,
okay. You know, no, it's not only...
But I just never, like...
It's similar to a South American Indians.
Yeah.
They have a few gods. And they are all natural nature, like the god of water, the god of sky, the god of earth.
Historically, yes. Although nowadays they're almost all Catholic.
But, I know.
But not Catholic how we might think of Catholic in Western Europe or in the United States. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a few differences. Like, it's interesting that the Spaniards came and spread their religion, but they allowed the natives to keep certain traditions.
So with the spice of the natural, which is
yes,
culture.
Absolutely. Still exists. Well, they worship, not worship like a god, but they have something called Pachamama, which is like Mother Earth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so whenever you drink alcohol, for example, you need to pour out a little bit before you drink. Yeah, that's for
Bolivia.
Pachamama.
I have one friend from Bolivia.
Yeah.
She said that. And we were in China together once, and we watched the fireworks show, which lasted for half an hour. like a non-stop half an hour, many fireworks. So after 15 minutes, the sky was like all the smoke, and you cannot see actually the fireworks, but it still lasted. And she was crying because, like, oh my God, she said, they hurt Pachamama.
Ah, right.
Huh. I cannot watch it. I said, wow, it's so. I liked it because
It's cool.
I don't have religion, but I like this natural thing to respect for culture, for nature, and the thing that everything in this world is sacred.
Yeah, it is a cool like outlook on the planet
grateful,
and on life.
To be grateful for all the what is given to you.
Yeah. Yet if you ask your friend or if you ask most people who will definitely talk about Pachamama a lot, they'll, if you ask them what religion they are, they'll almost always say Catholic. So that's an interesting part.
You know, the Christian religion, the Christian festivals, they're all mainly put on the natural festivals.
Right, yeah. They're derived from pagan holidays, or at the same time at least.
Yeah. So actually we're celebrating the same festivals as we celebrated a long time ago, just with the different names and a bit of different rituals, maybe.
Yeah.
Because my family is also not religious, and we all like fond of this pagan religion.
Okay.
But we still celebrate these because of my grandparents' influence. For example, the Christmas Eve.
Okay.
And the Christmas, and the Eastern.
And when the Soviets had control of your country, was religion completely wiped out? Or how did that work?
It was even stronger, I think, because when you prohibit some things, they put their roots even.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Even deeper.
Yeah.
So the religion, the Catholicism in Lithuania, the last century was really strong. It put his roots deep.
Huh. Yeah. It's like if you make marijuana illegal, then the kids all want to try it.
Yep. that's the point. Yeah.
And then you have stats like kids in the Netherlands smoke less marijuana than kids in the United States by percentage, even though it's legal there.
Yeah, that's the point, I think.
Yeah.
When you make something prohibited,
it's this forbidden fruit.
Forbidden fruit, you always want to taste it.
You want to try it.
But I think the religion in the last century, where there was dark times, very dark times in Lithuania, it helped many people. Faith. There was one psychologist, Jewish psychologist, who lived out the Auschwitz.
Oh, he was in Auschwitz?
Yeah, and he lived it through.
He lived what through the Second World War?
Yeah, the Auschwitz, and then he got released after the German lost. And he wrote what helped him, because all of his friends and relatives died because of no hope. And he said the faith kept him alive. Yeah. So the faith is a very strong thing that makes some wonders. So many Lithuanians in Siberia,
they were sent to prison camps?
Yeah, prison.
To gulags?
Gulags, yeah. A lot of them.
Huh.
And some of them lived through only by this faith.
Yeah, you have to cling to something, I guess. I can't imagine being in that kind of situation. And it's amazing that
I think every Lithuanian has a relative that went through the Siberia.
Oh, really? Yeah. It's that widespread, huh?
A lot of people were sent there.
Huh.
Yeah.
Someone from your family, too?
Yes, my grandmother, father and mother.
Your great-grandparents?
Yeah, my grandparents' parents.
Yeah, great-grandparents, wow.
Yeah, and other side was these partisan, do you know partisan?
Partisan?
Is this a word? Yeah.
Well, we use that in politics. For
okay, no, then. Guerrilla?
Oh, okay, yeah, guerrilla war.
Like these, and we call it forest men. They were hiding in the forest, very small groups, but all across Lithuania, and they were fighting the resistance war.
Okay, yeah, that would be guerrilla war.
with the Soviets, but then they had no hope, and in by 1953, they gave up. But there was also a huge culture about these people, the green people. They were in the forest, living in the forest, and then fighting with the small groups, the local governments or local soldiers, Soviet soldiers. They were hoping to free Lithuania.
Ah, okay.
Because during the 1980 and 1939, when this broke up,
World War II,
Lithuania was in, we call it interwar period.
Okay.
Between
wars from 39
and it was quite a successful era for Lithuania, like a golden age, the revival of the culture, because after the World War One, we got freed again from the Russians.
Okay.
So the first independence was in 1980s.
Oh, 1918. Oh, yeah. That's why I'm confused. Okay, you were saying 1918.
First independence.
Yes, okay.
Till the Second World War.
Till 1939 was very good for you.
Yeah. It's called the Golden Age for Lithuania, no?
Okay.
But then after, again, we got occupied, and then the second independence was in 1991.
Yeah. Okay. 1991. So fall of the Soviet Union, you were freed?
Collapsed, yeah.
And were you alive yet then? Were you born yet?
I wasn't born in 1994.
Yeah. So this is not something that you have any memory of, huh? You only know Lithuania of today.
No, actually, there was a long time the culture of the Soviet culture was so ingrained that by the 2000s it was still very alive.
Oh, really?
For example, these old buildings, the schools, all this stuff that you had in Soviet times, you still had it in your house when I was a kid.
Well, sure, I guess that doesn't just disappear, like infrastructure stays for a while.
Yeah, so this feeling was, I still had it, but not no repressions in school, no like restrictions of censorships or anything.
Huh.
This was not anymore.
And what's it like now? I mean, is there still Soviet influence there, or is it mostly gone?
It's mostly gone. Mm. In the big cities, it's totally gone. We're very pro-Western.
Mm.
Maybe too much sometimes, because our president is... Okay, I always talk about the politics is from the other, what I hear from people. And I think, it might be true. It's not because I researched and made my opinion about it. It's just because I think some people might see it through. So
that disclaimer being said.
Yeah, disclaimer. Then our president is so pro-Western that she doesn't go to any compromise with Russia.
Okay.
But this is not the best thing to do with your neighbors. Like, you should have at least some... And since we are so small, basically, you are showing the middle finger to Putin, even though we are quite small.
And that's a bold move.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And she's very strong. She's doing it, like, literally.
Hmm. Well, luckily, Russia has never invaded another country that kind of pisses them off, so you don't have anything to worry about. I'm totally kidding.
These worries are among the people after the Ukraine, that Russia will again invade us.
Yeah,
I don't think so. It's not. I'm idealist, so I hope that in this 21st century, there's no such stupid people to do stuff like this. Mm. I tend to think that 21st century, the people already got their awareness quite high to not do this kind of invading, colonizing, imperialist thing.
Yeah. Man, I hope we're starting to learn our lessons, but something tells me we're not.
History tends to repeat itself.
Yep, that's right. I'm cautiously optimistic about the world, but you just never know. What's gonna happen? It's a crazy world we live in.
I try to show to live by example.
Yeah, that's a good way of doing it, right?
That's the most I think I can do.
Just be the best person.
That's why I say I'm not the usual Lithuanian, because I'm very pacifist.
Okay.
I'm very idealist, maybe hippie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some call me a hippie, man.
Man, I've been called that too.
Just because of hair, huh?
Yeah, yeah. It's all about perspective.
I was called Jesus with this hair.
I get called Jesus a lot. Yeah.
Yep.
We're Jesus twins.
That's because I'm hoping for people to get this, and I do see the awareness is going quite rising right now in the people's mind. For example, this Dakota Pipeline. Have you heard this?
Oh, yeah, I've heard of it. Yeah.
This Native Indian reunion. Uh-huh. I'm so happy to hear this, that like all the tribes are now reviving their culture and getting together and praying, you know, for the peace and welfare for everybody. I feel very happy.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't know what the other side's perspective is, but damn, that just seems pretty bad when you've got your land and you've got a treaty and a company comes and just says it's gonna like do this thing that totally damages your land. And I mean,
that's why.
Yeah,
well, it's basically for the water, because
right,
water is the main resource and they are afraid.
And yeah, you need it.
I do support them.
And I don't even know what the other perspective is. But I think it's, from what I understand, I'm not in the United States, so it's a little hard for me to keep up with this stuff from abroad, but I can just read on the internet. It seems like it's over. Like, they're going to redirect this pipeline to some other place. And
I didn't know.
Maybe they can come up with some compromise, some win-win thing where
good,
you know, both sides are happy. I hope so.
We have these shamanistic movements in Lithuania a lot. That's what I like. What I miss in China is like raves. Do you know rave?
Like this music festival rave?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is like very spiritually peaceful, spiritual and peaceful, and all these hippies going together. They're all respectful, and then environmentalists and pacifists. This music is like very bright music. Of course, there's also a trance music, but it's also okay.
Oh, what music do they have besides trance?
You know, the getting together with all these different kind of instruments and jamming.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Or mantras.
Okay.
Indian mantras, you know.
Huh. Oh, sounds interesting.
Yeah. That's what. This is a very Lithuanian thing. I don't know, maybe that's why I cannot generalize the Lithuanians, because there are a lot of people who like these kind of things. They are Lithuanians. So I think there are many like me.
Yeah.
Many environmentalist pacifists.
Different sides to it. And when you think about it, like you're saying, you can't generalize Lithuanians. And Americans, there's literally 100 times more of us.
Yeah.
And so how could you possibly generalize Americans? And then when you look at Chinese, there's 4 times more Chinese than there are Americans.
Americans, yeah.
Which, forget it, you cannot generalize, but we still do. It's kind of something that helps us, I think, like categorize like what's happening in our minds. And if we don't make generalizations, sometimes I think we'll just kind of go crazy, because we won't have a understanding in our heads of what's happening. Even if that understanding is not really correct.
I give up this, this wanting to understand everything, you know.
Oh,
and after the second time of China trip, when I got back, I just said, China is so big, there are so many people, you can find everything.
Yeah.
Because everybody goes, so how is China?
Right, right.
How can you possibly say how is China? Big, a lot of people.
Those two are undeniable.
Yeah.
But beyond that, you just don't know. Have you heard of this expression that's pretty famous in English anyway, that if you come to China for a week, you could write a book. And if you come to China for a month, you could write an essay. And if you come to China for a year, you can write maybe a paragraph. And if you come to China for like 5 years, maybe you could write one sentence.
Oh.
And that totally rings true with me. I didn't think that would be the case when I moved here, but the longer I stay here, the less I have to say, because it's just, because I see so much and
it changes one thing.
Yeah, I'm not so one-sided now. I can see a number of opinions on just about every issue concerning this country. So, and I can see them all as valid. So how do I even say anything?
That's nice.
So, you know, I'm working on a book about South America, and it's not even really about South America. It's about my journey, but it's a memoir. And people have asked me many times, like, oh, you're going to write about China next, right? Like, I don't know, maybe not. I don't know what I even have to say.
I know, you know, I have a problem now because I haven't finished my undergrad. And we have to write a thesis in the end.
Okay.
About thing. And the more I stay here, the more I live, the less I have to say.
So you feel the same, huh?
So I feel I'm a bit worried about how will I finish my university, you know?
Oh, so this expression is even like affecting your university career.
I'm also a rebel. I really want to prove everyone that you don't need a university to live life. And my parents and grandparents all think differently.
Well, if you're that close, then
yeah, that's what they say. But
maybe you should just finish it. How much longer do you have to go?
Half a year,
and you would give it up?
But it's a big thing, you know. It's a thesis you have to write 45 pages.
Yeah.
About something.
Well, you'll come up with something.
Hopefully, but not because it's like it's hard or easy. Is because I want to prove my parents that you don't need a university degree to live a good life.
Well, maybe you can just explain that it's sufficient but not necessary. And or what you could do is get your degree.
It's painful.
And then go and apply for a job. But don't put on your application that you have a degree. And they'll never know. And then you can get the job and say, see, I told you, you don't need a degree. And then if you don't get the job, then maybe you put down that you have the degree.
That's quite a good idea. You admit
you're wrong. So you can have it both ways.
Yeah.
But you just have to push through for 6 more months.
Yeah, okay.
And then you've got it for the rest of your life. Man, it seems worth it to me. To 45 pages, that's... Do you know how long a book is?
You like to write, huh?
More than 45 pages.
I know.
Well, I hope you are able to finish it, but if you don't,
hopefully,
I'll still support you.
Now, when I'm in China, and especially when I'm traveling, I always like to look how the fate is put into your life.
Yeah.
So like you have a plan, but it not necessarily will come out as you've written it.
Nope. Right.
So that's why I cannot also say what will happen with my studies or with my life.
Yeah. You never really know. Anything could happen.
Although many people tend to think that they know, or how their life will go, or what they will do next year or next month. Even I cannot predict what I do next day.
But if you do make these predictions, like some people would, I think it helps it become a reality. Then again,
if they not get reality, they tend to worry a lot.
Then they'll worry. Yeah, I think you need a balance on this one.
If
you never have any goals, then you won't meet any goals. And if you have too many goals, you're probably worrying about those goals, and you're probably too rigid, and you're maybe stubborn. you work toward a goal that is pointless, even though it just because you have the goal, right? And so I think it's I think a balance is important here.
Yeah, that's what you can learn from Chinese culture. Balance is very important.
Yeah, for sure, and anything. But I'm even thinking of my like past travels, or even my future travels. We're going to take a year off probably and travel around. Yeah, I don't really think in terms of days or even weeks. I think in terms of months. I'm like, okay, October I want to be here. November I want to be here in this country, but not necessarily where in that country. And that I think that's, for me at least, that's a good length of time, like 1 month, to teach me, to help me like keep moving, keep on trying to reach whatever goal.
Mm-hmm.
But if in the short term, if I find out about some cool place, I can just go there. I don't have to like go, oh, but it's not in the plan. I already have a hotel booked for tomorrow night. I can't just go to some other random town.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I can, because I don't book hotels. And I can go wherever I want. But month to month, or even like 3 or 6 month chunks, I kind of can stick to a plan because I have it. So that's kind of how I balance it with travel. I'm not saying that's exactly the way you have to do it, but it works well for me.
Oh, I just came up with I remembered. Before traveling, I had this loss of interest in traveling.
Uh-huh.
I was always thinking why you should travel, because I used to travel and I really liked it, and now it's like, why do you need to travel?
Yeah.
So what's your motivation for traveling? What makes you want to travel?
And you wonder, are you asking me or are you?
Yeah, I'm directly asking you now.
Oh, okay. Well, you just kind of reminded me of this. I'm going to say this totally wrong, but there's this ancient, like, Buddhist story, I think, where the monk sends off his student wants to travel, and the monk sends off his student, like, say, travel the world for a year, and then come back to me and tell me what you think, and he does it, he goes away for a year, and he comes back, and he says to his monk, I saw all these really cool places and did these really cool things, but there was nothing that I really experience that I couldn't have experienced by just sitting here and meditating. And the monk said, yeah, I know, but you wouldn't have understood that if you had not traveled.
Yeah, okay.
Now, I think I got that probably not quite right, but
I know the story.
Oh, you do know it. Did I get it right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
If you never go through this, you never know. Yeah, that's the main
You
point.
Just don't know what it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And beyond that, I think for me, beyond just that lesson, like, I'm just a curious person. I always want to, like, learn new things. I don't really like being stuck in one situation. I lived in the same city for 6 years before coming to China, and in the same house for 6 years.
Uh-huh.
And I only left the country, like, once, and that was just to go to Canada for a couple days. Mm-hmm. So I didn't do a lot of traveling during those 6 years, but I took on a lot of new hobbies and new interests. And so those can also work for me. They can substitute for travel. But for me, travel, it's almost like the ultimate feeling of, like, always experiencing new things. And just, it's like taking my normal life and just putting it on fast forward. So I'm just living, like, everything I can all at once. And travel kind of does that to me in a way that, like, rock climbing doesn't do. It's almost hard to explain.
It has a lot of trouble when you travel. You have to find place. You have to think of these things.
Yeah, it's not easy.
It's cold. Sometimes it's really cold. It's unhygienic, or you have to find the food, or there's a language barriers, or you get in trouble, or these unpleasant situations, a lot of them.
Sure.
But then there's a satisfaction of traveling. So these two things, the troubles and the satisfaction, aren't the troubles overweigh the satisfaction?
I think
for you,
the result, the satisfaction for me, it makes the troubles worthwhile.
Okay, yeah, that's what
and
I mean.
Yeah. Just for an example, like in a week, my wife Katie will come here.
Mm.
She's finishing up the last week of teaching in Beijing before the Spring Festival, they call it, the Chinese New Year. So she'll come here down to Shaanxi in Yunnan, and we're going to get on bicycles and just ride for like 2 weeks. And we haven't done this before, and I don't know what's coming. I don't know how far we'll get. We kind of have a route planned, but nothing specific. And we have the bikes, but they didn't come with racks, so they're in Shaanxi here. And so yesterday I went to Dali, a bigger city, to get a rack, because you can't get one here. First of all, it was a lot of trouble to carry that bike because it's heavy, and I had to load it onto a bus and load it onto another bus. It took me a lot longer than I thought to get to Dali, so I didn't have a lot of time. And then I was looking on my phone for bike shops, and I couldn't find any, and I was surprised because I've gotten pretty good with Chinese like characters and finding things. Excuse me. And so I thought, okay, screw it. I'm just going to ask a taxi driver to take me to a bike shop. I don't have time because I wanted to come all the way back in the same day. I thought, I don't have time. So I asked the taxi driver, do you know where there's a bike shop near here? And she said, yeah, I know where there's one. And so we agreed on a price, got the bike in a taxi. The woman's husband drove me, and he was like, the bike shop's right over there. And he pointed. And so I got out, and I was like, after the van left, I was like, oh shit, there's no bike shop here. He just like drove me to this random market and took my money. Like, so now I'm still at like square one. So I got on my bike and started riding around and asking all these people, like, do you know where there's a bike shop? And they would either point me, because this happens in China a lot, they'll just point somewhere and say, yeah, it's down there. But I've learned since coming here that doesn't necessarily mean it's down there. It's they just don't want to admit that they don't know.
Yeah, that's the Chinese thing.
So I know it's kind of a long story, but there were like 3 hours in there where I was super frustrated. I was like, I'm never going to find a bike rack, and I'm just going to be stuck here, and I don't even know where to look. And I was just biking around at that point, just hoping to stumble upon a bike shop, and I couldn't find one. But I eventually stumbled upon a market, a pretty big market, and I started just asking like the fruit vendors if there's a bike shop, and they didn't know. And then I found a motorcycle shop, and I asked him if he knew anything about bicycles, and he was like, oh yeah, there's a bike shop right down the road. And I was like, jackpot, yes. And so I found it, and it was this guy with a little shop, just a couple of bicycles for sale, no big deal. But then immediately I'm like, okay, I need a rack, I need a kickstand. And he was like, oh yeah, okay. And he did it all. Like in half an hour I was completely set. So I went from being just really frustrated, thinking I would never find this thing, to just being like, yeah. And so, and then I made it all the way back to Shaanxi like I had originally planned. And I had already thought, no way I'm getting back to Shaanxi today. I'm going to be stuck in the city overnight. All my stuff is in Shaanxi. I forgot to bring a toothbrush. You know, I don't have any clothes. Because I just thought I'd for sure make it. Anyway, I did end up getting back. And I mean, I know that's a long and maybe not so interesting story, but the point is there's all these bad things happening, and there's emotional lows that I wouldn't normally experience in day-to-day life while not traveling. Like when I'm just at home living my life, it's just kind of like flat, like a zero, or on a scale of negative 10 is horrible, or let's say a scale of zero is horrible, 10 is really great, my life would be like a 5 always. And maybe it goes up to 6, maybe down to 4, but doesn't really vary that much. But then when I'm traveling, yesterday it was probably down to like 2. I was really starting to get bummed out. And then when I got everything taken care of and I got back, it was like up to a 9. I was like super happy. So
emotional roller coaster.
Yeah, there's more of a roller coaster, and I get more of that out of travel than I would just at home. So That's a big reason why I like to do it, why I like to travel.
That's the troubles, from the troubles perspective, this enjoyable moment seems to be even more enjoyable than it would normally be. That's what it's emotional roller coaster.
Right. Like, yeah.
When you try this not tasty food. The normal food will seem like it's the most delicious food you ever had.
That's true. That's true. After like walking in the wilderness for like a week, where you're just eating rice and like potatoes every night, just bland food. Just even a basic, you just go to McDonald's and get a cheeseburger and it tastes like caviar or something. It's crazy how that can happen, that your perspective gets distorted.
That's why you travel.
Yeah, what about you?
I haven't answered. Okay, I have answered a bit when I was in Meili Mountain, the snow mountain, which is like 5,600 meters. I was climbing to the one spot for 3, 4 hours, but then when I in it was quite hard. The travel was hard and troublesome, but when I got to the point, the main peak, and I looked at this, how beautiful and good feeling it brought to me, I may answer that for these kind of moments, yeah, it's worth traveling to go through these kind of things, to see this kind of beauty of the world, these natural wonders.
Yeah.
And maybe in here also, to one part of the answer would be that meeting these people, like you, these kind of people.
Yeah, the people who work here are like really awesome too.
Yeah,
Really cool people.
the cool people, yeah.
Yeah.
When you can make something nice out of the encounters. That brings joy.
Yeah, I agree too. I mean, like at home, it's pretty rare that I would just be at home and someone would come over and I'd go, "Where are you from?" And they go, "Oh yeah, Lithuania," and like that, or any just random country. It just wouldn't happen. But traveling, you meet people from all over the world who have different stories and
The
that.
travel makes you very broad-minded, open-minded,
Yeah.
which is then afterwards it's hard to speak with your family members, isn't it?
Yeah, it can be at times. It can be hard to come home. Yeah,
When
that's
you
the
see
downside.
all kinds of cultures, all kinds of people, and you go back and you see, oh, there's only like this kind of people. And then you see, no, there's more kind of people.
I think we've learned a lot of good lessons. You taught me a bit about your country, and I appreciate that, and your perspective. And I think your perspective is.
Nice talking.
Yeah, you too. I think we have a lot in common, actually, even though we're from different continents and
Especially in
different
your looks.
societies. Yeah, we do look similar. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. For more information, you can visit my website, 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number 1000. daysbetween.com. From there, you can sign up to get updates from this podcast delivered directly to your inbox. Remember, the Around the World podcast is all about meeting ordinary people who have done extraordinary things. Thanks for listening.